Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Deeper Podcast, a podcast for all of you who want more. More out of yourself, your relationships, your intimacy, and life. My name is Sophie Josefina, and I'm here to bring you deeper. I'm a sex, life, and relating coach, and I'm fascinated by all things masculine and feminine and bringing the two back together, helping people connect on a deep and real level so we can show up for each other, partner with each other in our healing, and call each other back into our power. A very important part of that for me is honoring both sides, the masculine and the feminine, creating more understanding, more compassion, and respect for each unique experience. And so in this series, I'm speaking specifically to men to honor them, to hear their perspective and how they go through relating the feminine life. Because so often we have demonized and devalued men in their experiences, needs, and struggles. And I want to change that. So I hereby welcome you to my Deeper Into Him podcast series. And before we get started for all these conversations, I want to give a bit of a disclaimer because I realize that this conversation about men and women, masculine and feminine, can sound both heteronormative and gendered. Bear with me. Masculine-feminine dynamics play it out in every relationship. So when we speak about men towards women, I hope you can hear it as being the partner who is more in their masculine and the partner who is more in their feminine, and this very often has little to do with gender. In addition to that, I do want to acknowledge that men and women have completely different societal expectations in the world, and because of that, different lenses. For instance, we tell men they should man up and women they should smile more. In that sense, some of this might be gendered, but I hope for people outside of that binary perspective that they might still feel some truth in any of these stories. And for this fourth edition of Conversations with Men, I will be joined by Taylor Johnson. And Taylor is a sex educator and a coach who helps men master their sexual energy so they can create the intimate lives of their dreams. And Taylor and I honestly have a deep and delicious and raw conversation on all the harder topics that can arise in intimacy and relating. We speak about how to best support your man when there are performance issues or struggles in the bedroom, how to communicate in a way with your man that actually calls him into his masculine power. Taylor lets us know where all the good men are. We also go into a bit more of the more difficult topics like sexual fantasies and sexual fantasies that are related to trauma. And for the men, we speak into how to be with your turn on, how to master your sexual energy, how to be with your desires, and actually really the sexiness of safety, of creating safety for your partner, and how that will turn on the feminine so deeply. So lots of juiciness and wisdom in here. Enjoy. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Deeper Into Him. And today I am joined by Taylor Johnson, and he is an intimacy coach for men to help men master their sexual energy so they can create the life of their true desires. And I've been following him for a while, and he speaks into so many topics that I think a lot of people don't even dare to. So I'm very excited to speak with him today to hear his perspective, thoughts, and ideas on this whole masculine, feminine relating and sexuality. So before we dive in too deep already, I would love to hear a bit more about you, Taylor. Like, who are you? What's your journey? What's your story?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me on. I'm really excited about this topic. You know, I usually talk about other things on podcasts, but when this idea came up, I was like, oh yeah, let's have this conversation. This is great. So for me, my journey into, I guess you could call it more mindful or conscious sexuality, intentional sexuality, started a little over 10 years ago. I was really struggling a lot with premature ejaculation and low sexual confidence. And like, I would even avoid sexual encounters with women, or I would even avoid getting to know women because I was afraid of that moment when the sexual encounter would come and that I wouldn't perform well, or, you know, or I would disappoint them or something like that. And so that was a challenging period of my life. And that forced me to do some, something in my throat.
That's okay.
Excuse me. That forced me to do some introspection and some life evaluation. And, I was asking the deeper questions like, oh man, am I even a man? Like, if I can't adequately please this woman, like, what kind of man am I? You know? So there's all sorts of self-worth stuff. LinkedIn with this. And eventually I found myself in a relationship, a longer term relationship with a great woman. We were together for over 3 years and we lived together. And I started to notice that certain things seemed like they would impact our level of intimacy and our level of connection. For example, I was addicted to porn and I was watching porn all the time.
Yeah.
And I started to notice that the more I watched porn, the less our connection seemed to be potent and alive. Right. And the less I wanted to have sex with her, you know, and the more we would get into arguments. And so I would start to experiment with, maybe I won't watch porn for a week and see what happens. And sure enough, my sex drive or my sexual interest went up with her. And so I started exploring that. And then I started to explore like, I heard in a Tantra book that, hey, maybe there's something to try when you don't ejaculate every time you have sex.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me at that time, I was like, fuck off. You know, like, the fuck is that? But then I was like, why not? You know, like I'll experiment with it. And I found that sure enough, like that had an impact on our intimacy too, not just in the bedroom, but in, you know, in our overall relationship. And so longer story short, from that point on, like I became really interested in this stuff. And I was a professional photographer and filmmaker at that time working in the business realm. And I've worked for all these major corporations. And at a certain point I realized that all the books on my wall, all the books on my bookshelf, they all had to do with sex. They all had to do with relationship. There was like David Dita books galore, Montauk Chia, like Urban Tantra, you know, all these things that are just, they're just like staples, if you will, you know, of going this direction. And then eventually I had the thought like, you know, this is much more fun to talk about than photography even. So why don't I try to do this? Like, I'd rather talk to people about this than take, you know, more photo shoots for companies I don't necessarily believe in.
Yeah.
So that's how I got to be where I am right now, which is, you know, sex educator, coach for men, et cetera.
Wow. I love this. I love this story because I think it's a story for so many men. I think so many men go through this where something starts happening to their erection or their ejaculation. And then, you know, it really affects how they connect or if they even connect. And it's such a deeply impacting thing. And they live within a secrecy.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally. Can't talk about it. Definitely don't talk to your, you know, brothers about it.
No. But I think like, it's like, isn't it like 1 in 3 men have something happen to their erection? I think like the numbers are way higher than most people realize.
I think it's got to be more than that because pretty much every guy I've talked to at some point has not been able to get an erection when he's wanted to, has ejaculated before he's wanted to, or, you know, any number of things. So I think, And I think this like goes off the myth that men always need to like, we can always have an erection on command and we should be able to have sex with anybody at any moment. And I know that's a whole other tangent for another conversation. That's a myth. We're actually not machines.
Yeah. Yeah. I usually, when I have this conversation with my male clients, when they have some issue with their erection, I say, you know what, maybe you have a good bullshit meter, right? So maybe your dick is telling you that, not now, not this, I'm missing something, I'm not feeling safe, I'm not happy, I'm not really connected. Is that usually what you would, I realize you're very specialized in this, I'm trying to get a very simple answer now, but is this what you think is usually underlying it, that there's something on a deeper level that maybe isn't aligned into the act that's about to happen?
You know, man, there's so many possible reasons why you could ejaculate before you want to, or not be able to ejaculate, or have erectile dysfunction or anything like that. And, and one thing that's not often talked about that you mentioned that I just want to hit here is that I do think that our genitals and our sexual response system has an intelligence of its own that's actually linked in with our larger intelligence, but we isolate it so much in our life that it feels separate, you know, feels compartmentalized. And maybe if your penis isn't getting hard, like maybe you actually don't want to be having sex with this person.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So to really bring it into kind of a masculine, feminine or relating dynamic, I have a lot of women that are asking me this, like how to support your man if he is struggling with something like this. Because I think, one of the big things I live with is that the women are most afraid physically that something will happen to them, and men are most afraid to be made fun of. So if you really start respecting that in the masculine, that, you know, like the biggest fear, really terror, is to be made fun of or to be ridiculed, then a situation as having something with your erection or ejaculation that being discussed by your woman is terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So how can a woman or a partner to somebody who is suffering with this, how can you best support your man?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And the immediate answer that comes up, well, the immediate thing that comes up for me is wanting to make a joke. And then I realized, you know, maybe I'll wait a little bit for a joke. So what comes up for me is that in my experience and a lot of guys that I've talked to and my understanding of polarity, like if we're talking about a heteronormative relationship here and a man and a woman, when a woman experiences their partner having some sort of problem or challenge with their sexuality, like if she takes initiative and goes ahead and starts researching it or trying to come up with answers or something like that,
it can
bring up a lot of stuff for the man.
Yes.
And it can not feel very good or supportive even. It can reinforce like this, like, oh, am I not okay? You know, sort of vibe. Yeah. And so really a great access point is to ask a question, like paired with an observation. That's the best way you could possibly do it. So an observable, like as if a camera on the wall were to see this, like, hey, baby, I noticed that the last time we had sex, and you ejaculated, there was this look in your eye that I interpreted maybe as like sadness or disappointment or something like that. And I'm just like curious if you wanted to talk about that, that could be a great opener. And because that's like pairing, there's no arguing with your observation,
right?
You know, as long as you don't say anything like you were mad or you were, you know, because that's not really an observation. That's a judgment.
Yeah.
If you're like the look in your eye, I felt this when I saw that, you know,
yeah.
Or I've noticed that the last three times we've had sex, this particular thing has happened.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you want to, you know, talk about it with me because I really value you and I want to support our sex life and I want to support our relationship and you're important to me.
Yeah. So what if it, now I'm going to make it trickier. What if it really does affect the woman, right? So I know from my personal experience, I have absolutely been cases where it really affected me as well. Like a woman, like the sexual act is also a nourishment for the feminine partner. And let's say a man like has a very quick ejaculation. Like I've been in relationships where that was really hard to be with also for me.
Yeah.
And I did not want to make him feel less than a man. I did not want to criticize him, but how, like, what is the best way to then bring into the space that it does affect you?
Yeah.
But that you're not trying to belittle or criticize or judge.
Totally. This is a dance of communication, you know, and as women, you're dancing here with so many things, one of the primary things you're dancing with is all the programming you get from society around needing to please, you know, need to be the one to please your partner, please the man, like don't disappoint, don't upset, like your role is to serve, right?
Yes.
And that's a problematic piece of programming that exists in our society.
Yeah.
And so the other part of this coin is that you're a real sovereign human with your own needs and emotions. And like, that's fucking important, you know? So if you're, say for example, you're with a partner who's regularly struggling with premature ejaculation and it's impacting you know, it's impacting your desire to connect with them. It's impacting your feelings of safety and closeness with them, et cetera.
Yeah.
Like primary thing you could do, or one thing you could do is say, hey, I'm noticing that there's something I would really like to talk about with you about our relationship. Are you open to that right now? And if not right now, then let's set a time where we can go into a conversation. And so there you're like framing the context, like, yes, I want to have a conversation with you about something in our relationship that's impacting me.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to like throw it on you right now, but I want to have this conversation, you know?
Yeah.
And so then that's step one. Step two is when you actually, well, if they say no to that, then I would say leave the relationship.
Right.
Like 100% like get out because they're not valuing you as a person.
Right.
But say you do make it to the conversation piece.
Yeah.
And then again, it's, I would start with an observation.
Yeah.
You know, start with an unarguable observation of something that has happened.
Yeah.
And then specifically how you feel about that, like when that has happened.
Right.
And there's like some language judo you can use in there, but if you stick to I statements, like this shit is really effective, you know? Say, hey, I've noticed the past four times or three times, whatever it is that we've had sex, you have ejaculated, and then like it seemed like you disconnected from me, or you were not interested in being sexual anymore. And for me, I felt pain when that happened, because I really want to experience pleasure, and I want to experience your love, and I want to experience your touch.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that hurt.
Yeah.
And then here's another conversation judo piece. Then you could ask them, could you tell me what you heard me just say?
Right. That one's so powerful.
Totally. So this is all coming from nonviolent communication stuff, but it's like, it's simple, but like it needs to be said over and over again. This stuff is really effective, you know?
Yeah. And these situations are very, very delicate, and it's very easy to trigger each other like crazy in a setting like this. So these things like nonviolent communication are so important.
Yeah. And I'm going to add one other piece to that.
Yes.
Yes, nonviolent communication. And one thing that is often not talked about in nonviolent communication is like, you could use all the technique in the world, but if your underlying intentions and your underlying emotions are charged, and you're like, fuck you, like that's going to come through, you know?
Yeah.
So before you have that conversation, if you can get to a place that feels like loving and balanced, like that's going to be infinitely helpful. And then closing that up with some sort of request, like, are you willing to work on this? Or are you willing to have support, you know, for our relationship?
Yeah.
You know.
That's gorgeous. Do you think like being in in the more masculine role in the relationship, like that, is that something that a man is receptive to hear, to be spoken to like that?
Yeah. If you go through those things, and if you make the request, like, are you willing to do this?
Yeah.
Because then it creates the space for them to step into their own masculine leadership. Like if they choose to, like it will be sensitive for them.
Yeah.
And like part of masculine sexual leadership is to be able to step into the discomfort, you know, and say, okay, like this is something I could work on, and I'm going to do that because I value myself, and I value you, and I value our relationship.
Yeah.
But if there's if there's anything like, you need to do this, like that, you know.
You know, that doesn't work. Like I think a lot of women, we think that that's the powerful way to speak. Mm-hmm. Like say what you are doing, what's wrong, and how you need to be different. And it creates a lot of very, I think, imploded men.
Totally.
Because, you know, a man then has to like almost compete to become the king again. And he doesn't want to, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't want to go through that. So I think it creates a lot of kind of passive, complacent men that are just like, okay, whatever.
Totally. If you as a woman can lead with your vulnerable, authentic emotion.
Yeah.
And let them really feel that, and really feel the impact of your interactions on your system and your connection with them. Like, bam, that's going to open up so much.
Yeah. That's so
without beautiful. Having any sort of neediness or like, you need to fix me attached to it. Just be your authentic, sovereign self.
Yeah. That's such a beautiful thing that you're mentioning. I think that's the biggest challenge for women, is to actually be vulnerable and not be vulnerable to get something.
Totally.
So that you don't show your pain, because he then will change, or you think you're guilt tripping him into changing, but really just showing like that hurt.
Yeah.
And to not expect something to come back. I'm curious about your thoughts on another piece that, you know, I know from my personal experience and also from my clients that, you know, sometimes in these kind of interaction, we really touch like kind of an inner child piece, right? When we get triggered. And with men, that's often slightly like sulky, or it can be a bit like angry. Mm-hmm. Right. And if I can make it more specific, it's like when you tell a guy, I'm not feeling into sex so much, and it was leading to that. And a guy saying, you know what, now I'm going to have blue balls and that's going to hurt. Mm-hmm. Right. To me, that sounds like a more of a little boy that is just really disappointed that something isn't going to happen and is responding to that by kind of being grumpy. How do you, as like a mature feminine or a mature being, and this may be bigger than just masculine and feminine, how do you respond to that?
Yeah.
Because this is scary. So when, like for women, especially when there's a bit of the anger in there, the angry charge from the masculine, that can be really like, you know, that can be scary. Where the man is afraid to be ridiculed, that's when in my brain something happens like, am I still physically safe because he's angry now?
Totally.
So what's a way to be, maybe this is, we're going to like black belt shit right away, but What's a way to kind of be with this triggered state in men?
Yeah.
Especially around sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Mm, that is a good question. That's a good question. And what I shared earlier, I think really applies. Like, obviously, if you actually feel like you're in physical danger, like, leave.
Right. Yeah, so I'm not talking of course. About that.
And we're not talking about that. Totally. And it's important to just say that again and again and again, just to have that be in our psyche. And yeah, approaching with as challenging as it can be sometimes, like as much as you can stay in your loving, compassionate center. And this is a practice, you know, as much as you can stay in your loving, compassionate center and respond from that place.
Yeah.
And say, hey, you know, I hear that you really, you know, that you're disappointed right now. And for me, like this is really important. And here's why, you know, or like, you know, the more like, the more you can just stay in your authentic sovereign, like vulnerable. I feel this.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And I know that's not always the easiest thing to do. And it is a practice. And this is part of the practice of sexual yoga. Just as for men, the practice of sexual yoga is to work on not getting triggered, you know, when something like that happens and integrating that energy into your system and seeing, okay, my partner doesn't actually owe me anything.
Right.
You know,
right.
Sex can be a celebration.
Yeah. So I think we also discussed this a little bit on my Facebook and my Instagram. Like, what about the situation where a couple doesn't want to have sex so much anymore because the woman feels kind of obligated to do it? Especially in longer term relationships, right? They can start feeling like an obligation and he can start feeling like it's kind of owed. And I'm not saying that he really thinks she should do something that she doesn't want to, but that maybe deeper down, he's thinking, yeah, but it's Thursday evening, right? We're doing this tonight. So that there's kind of, this kind of sense of being owed on a very subtle level. Like, what do you think is happening there when maybe I'm trying to understand the masculine side of this, the man side of this, of expecting sex and then it not happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's complex.
Yeah.
It's complex. I'm thinking about a good friend of mine recently who is in long-term relationship with his partner of like 5 years, you know, and they're married and they're having different levels of sexual desire right now. And this question is up, you know, and one of them, well, yeah, I'll just say like he is wanting more sex more regularly than she is.
Yeah.
And this is a real thing that happens. Like, and if you're in long-term relationship, you're probably going to go through periods of this, you know, and probably some of you listening right now, you've already experienced this, I'm sure. Like people navigate this in different ways, you know?
People
navigate this by defaulting to the lowest common denominator. Right. And then maybe one of them self-pleasures more, you know, this is where some people decide to open their relationship or try different practices. And there's so many different possibilities and reasons for this. It's kind of hard to like pinpoint just one.
So what can a man do to help a woman who maybe feels like sex is a bit obligated because he's expecting it because it always happens on Thursday night?
Yeah. So, So if there's a guy listening to this and you're starting to feel like, you know, you have like, if you feel like you're obligated or not you're obligated, but your partner's obligated to give you sex or whatever, or you're expecting that.
You're
like,
expecting it. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. This is an opportunity for you to like take a step back and try to release that, because think about it. If you're like, when have you been expected to do something regularly? Like, and how did that feel in your life?
Right.
Like, maybe it felt great at first, but over time that's going to start to build up resentment. And over time that's going to start to build up some disconnection, you know?
Right.
And sure, like you can think of a time back in your life where that has happened to you.
Yeah.
So if you can just like flip the roles there and put yourself in her shoes, like that is going to build up resentment and disconnection over time.
Yeah.
And it's also ultimately not going to result in you getting what you want over time. Sure, you might have sex on Thursday, but then you might not experience like the fantasy you've always wanted to happen, happen 2 weeks later because your partner's in this strange polarity dynamic with you where you're feeling like you're expecting them to do certain things. And that's not going to open to anybody.
Right.
Like, nobody's going to want to like initiate a threesome or anal sex or whatever your fantasy is, you know, dressing up like superheroes, like You know, that's just like one practical example.
Yeah.
And if you start to treat sex as a gift, it just makes every sexual experience that much more rich.
Yeah.
Too. You know, if you can really feel in your body, and especially if you're in long-term relationship, if you can really take a step back, maybe even take some space from your partner and like approach their body as a gift, you know, like their lips as a gift, their fingers, their arms, like if you can step back into that space, as you know, and it's a practice, that's going to do so much for your relationship.
I love that. So beautiful. It's so beautiful to hear a man say that. It's really like, what do you think is the main challenge for men in relating or connecting to women, or what do you think is the main pain point there?
Well, I think there are different categories of humans.
Yeah.
So right now I'll speak to the people who I think would be listening to this podcast.
Right.
And these are people who I think are interested in deepening their sexual connection with themselves, their relationships, their partners, etc. And so what I see as a challenge right now in the landscape of all this stuff is there are a lot of women's groups and women's sexual empowerment things going on, and women getting together and learning about their bodies, learning about their anatomy, learning about the pleasure response cycles and all this stuff. And there aren't as many men stepping into this. And so I see a lot of times there's women who are exploring this stuff and they really want their partner to explore it with them, and their partner is maybe doesn't know about it or isn't as interested, or, you know, any number of things like that. So there can be a mismatch there, you know, and a lot of times men don't even know where to go for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I see this as a challenge in this particular community of people that I think would be listening to this.
Yeah. Do you think men can be, in a sense, like intimidated almost by that?
Some men. Mm-hmm. Some men, definitely some men. And it's interesting because generally speaking, men respond really well. Men are inspired to grow often by competition.
Yeah. You
know, and by sort of like, oh man, like you could do better than that, you know?
Yeah.
Usually that's coming from another man.
Right.
but men respond really well to that sort of thing, whereas women oftentimes respond to praise. You know, so there's that like polarity difference.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes there can be an intimidation factor for sure.
Yeah.
And I think other times that intimidation can show up as like just not seeming interested at all.
Right.
Or distancing, you know?
Right. Right. What do you do in a situation where you feel that maybe your man is a bit intimidated?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Communication, you know,
bringing it like into the space.
Bringing it into the space. Like if you can communicate, you know, create an invitation for a conversation. Like,
right.
Hey, baby, I would love to talk with you about this because you're important to me, because our relationship is important.
Right.
If you keep leading with that,
right.
Like that's like, oh, I'm valued as the man.
Yeah.
Like I am valued. Our connection is valued.
Yeah.
And that's the foundation for whatever interaction is going to happen next.
Right. You know? Right.
And then talk about this and you can express your desires, you know, and they've also the reality of this shit is like, not everyone's going to want to change. Not everyone's going to want to do work. And so this brings up another big shadow piece for a lot of people when they start going into this stuff. It's like, if you start doing this work and you start really changing yourself, you start really changing your patterns.
Yeah.
It's possible that your partnership isn't going to continue to serve you, you know? Yeah. So then what do you do?
Yeah.
do you stay with them because of some other pattern?
Yeah.
Or are you able to, you know, consciously, lovingly separate yourself because you see that that's not actually serving you so much anymore?
Yeah. I think it's so beautiful that you're saying that. Yeah. When you consciously start working on what's coming up in your sexual space and your relating space, and you go through it in this beautiful way that you're describing, like the non-violent communication, like really bring into the space without attacking. Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable because if you show up for that, you're gonna have to deal with your shit. You're called into your sovereignty. So you can absolutely say like, I am not gonna go into that conversation, but then it's a conscious decision. It's something you have to speak out. Totally. To like, okay, I don't actually want to deal with this right now, or I do. And both of those are uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Both of those are uncomfortable. So not everybody will follow that. And you might not, you might not end up in a position where it still feels compatible or like it's serving you.
Totally.
And that's okay.
Yeah, that is okay. It's okay to leave relationships.
Yeah.
And there are going to be the situations where your partner is going to want to rise and is going to want to do the work and meet you in that space. And those people exist too. And and if that's the case, like the inspiration for that needs to come from within them, their own inspiration versus like top down coming from you or anywhere else. Like this is really important for men. Like if they're going to do this work, they need to want to do it for themselves. And if you're in a situation where they're doing the work, quote unquote, but it seems like they're only doing it because you want them to and not because they want to, like huge red flag.
Yeah. You know? So glad you're saying that.
Huge red flag. And because, for any guy listening to this, like if your partner's really wanting you to do this stuff, if you don't want to do it, don't fucking do it, you know?
Yeah.
And if you're going to do it, make sure that you really want to be the one doing this for you.
Yeah. Know? That doesn't come from a pleasing to your woman or like trying to be agreeable or trying to be the good guy.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. This is what I try to teach the women that I work with is that, you know, we can support our men, but like the worst thing that you can do is tell a man how to do his meditation, for instance. He's not, even if it's super beneficial for him, he's not going to want to do that. You don't want your woman to tell you how to meditate.
Totally.
He needs to find that himself. So all you can say is like, hey, by the way, I learned about Osho meditation. Maybe it's your thing. That's it.
Yeah.
And then his decision. Then it's his path. And to start trusting men again that they've got themselves.
Yeah.
Right? That we start trusting men again that, you know, like they have maybe a different path than you would as a woman and different resources, but to trust them that they have got themselves and that they will be moved to change or transformation when it's their time.
Totally.
And to not do the emotional caretaking for them, to not, you know, you don't have to do it for them. And it doesn't work. You really have to respect the man's need for freedom and for his own decision. Yeah. Totally.
And freedom doesn't necessarily mean polyamory or open relationship.
No, no, it's that beautiful sentence that you just said of like, I'd like to have a conversation about this. Would you be like open to that? That's respecting his freedom. You're not like imposing a conversation. You're saying, if you'd like to do that, I would like to do that too.
Yeah. And I know I've heard from a lot of women and I see like on my social media posts and comments I've had with people, they're like, where the fuck are all these men? You know,
right.
Like, I want a conscious man. You know, I want to find somebody who's doing this work.
And so where are all the men?
Yeah. And they're out there.
Yeah.
Like they're absolutely 100% out there, you know, and these groups are starting to grow. Like their Sacred Sons is an awesome organization. Oh, yes. It's like this spinoff from the Mankind Project. And I've done the Mankind Project. I was going to do Sacred Sons this year and then coronavirus happened. But there's, you know, those organizations are happening. David Dita is doing workshops. Mm-hmm. John Wineland is another amazing person. He's doing a lot of men's work. I'm going to go do a retreat of his next month. And so these, and I'm the courses that I run, I literally have men in them from all around the world. There were a couple men in my last one from Amsterdam, actually, by the way. and like South America and Australia and Africa, like really, like literally everyone. Yeah. So like it's growing, you know, it's growing.
Yeah. Do you think maybe women can't recognize always a good man when he's in front of her?
Wow, that's a question. I think all genders and all bodies have trouble recognizing a good person when they're in front of them.
Yes. You know? Amen. Yeah.
Because of the way our society has programmed us to always want the next best thing and like, oh, you're not complete. Buy this product. Oh, you know.
Yeah.
They're not good enough. Look at this superstar, et cetera, et cetera. Like our programming around satisfaction and contentment is fucked up in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think men have this? Cause okay, this is just a narrative, but that men want to sleep with lots of women or always want to have the new thing. I know this isn't completely true. I know women have this just as much, but just playing into the stereotype here. Do you think that's coming from the same socialization of like, oh, there's a new thing.
Mm. This is a rich question for me, at least. I think it can be many things, you know, and I know guys, and I've been in the space before where it's like, ooh, the next shiny person. Ooh, look at that. Wow. She's hot. You know, like boom, 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 like going around, and even in long-term relationship, just getting bored and wanting a new partner. And this is like, I am fundamentally of the belief that we are not a monogamous species. Yep. By that, before you, like anyone listening, jumps into the judgment thing here, by that I'm saying, I would bet there's maybe zero people listening to this right now who have only had one relationship in their life ever.
Right.
You know, we move often from relationship to relationship to relationship, and our interests change and our commitments change and our passions change. And that's a natural part of the process. And so when you're in long-term relationship, anyone who's been in long-term relationship for a while knows that at least desires are going to come up for other people. Yeah. This is regardless of your gender or your genitalia. I do think that I'm not even sure I want to gender that, because the more I talk to women, the more I learn about this, like women seem to be almost equally interested in new partners and this sort of thing. And this topic, you know, your podcast is around like, what do men want? So my personal story, like what I really want in a relationship right now, like I've explored polyamory. That took so fucking much energy.
It's exhausting. It's a lot of work.
There's beauty and holy shit, you know? And a lot of guys are like, idealize this whole idea of dating two women at once. And like, it's great until you try it. And then you're like, holy shit. You know, it's a lot more effort than you ever imagined. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think that comes a lot from the objectification culture in porn. It's like, oh, two is better than one, you know? Yeah. It's like, oh, I'll be so much more of a man. And it's like, okay, but then what happens if you want to go to a family gathering or a party? Or
right.
Something? See, these right. are, you're all just beings having, you know, sovereign emotions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so what I really want right now is I want more of a monogamish committed partnership where my partner and I can explore sexually with each other and then also with other people at the same time. Yeah. Like that's super interesting to me, like with another couple, with another individual person, like, because that sort of ticks the box of exploring the new situation without having to navigate multiple partnerships, you know? Yeah. And I have not fully experienced that in my relationship history, but I do know people that have had that, and it seems to work really well for them. Yeah. Their relationship seems to be a lot more stable and plenty loving and plenty new, you know, plenty like exhilarating to have these experiences over the years.
There, I want to touch on two things. One is there's an amazing book called Untrue. And it's this by this sex researcher that pretty much found that actually women are more unfaithful or want to be more unfaithful sooner and more so than men. And that this whole idea of evolution that like a woman wants to stay with one man is a completely like, maybe that's true for some women, but absolutely not for all. There's also an evolutionary thing to actually sleep with lots of men because it's really hard to get pregnant.
Totally.
So she's a sex researcher. She found that actually women much sooner than men want variation in their relationship, but they internalize and they think something's wrong, so they don't act on it as much. Yeah. But they're the first ones to want variation much sooner than a man. And so what we think is the stereotype and what's actually happening, there's a very big difference between the two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to follow that up with another book recommendation.
Yeah.
there's this book called Tell Me What You Want. It's all about sexual fantasy. And this researcher, he did a big study surveying all these different sexual fantasies and the prevalence of them. And then really interestingly, he looked at the impact of acting out these sexual fantasies in relationship and what benefits did they give to a relationship, you know, or what did they take away from? And so it's this fascinating thing. So, for example, things like anal sex and bondage, and slapping and choking, like those things are common sexual fantasies, right? Like lots of people have them. Yeah. And when you explore those in the context of long-term monogamous or monogamish relationship, it can add to your relationship. It can add feelings of closeness and connection. Yeah. And also the risk for them to backfire and destroy your relationship is very low.
It's very small. Yeah.
It's very small.
Yeah.
And then what is a much more common fantasy, and it's close to like 90% for all genders, is some sort of group type sexual experience.
Yes.
And maybe that doesn't necessarily mean having sex with multiple people. Maybe that means you and your partner have sex in a room with somebody watching, or in a room with others. But that often does mean a threesome or a foursome or some sort of scenario like this. And in that book, the author talks about how those experiences, if done well with good communication, have the potential to positively impact your relationship like way more than exploring, you know, anal sex or something like this, because of the level of intentionality that you need to bring to that in order to have it be positive, generally speaking.
That's so beautiful. I love that.
And those experiences also have the potential to royally fuck your relationship up if you don't do it well. You know, so it's like playing with fire, but it was really beautiful for me to see it. And I've experienced that. Like I've had a few threesome, a handful of threesome experiences, and most of them have been shitty.
You know,
to be totally honest, I think the amount of like really positive threesome experiences I've had is like less than five.
Right.
You know,
three,
maybe two, you know,
it's getting less and less.
I don't know how we got on this topic, but like it's an interesting one for me.
What I find fascinating about desires is that it's, for me, it's like the most innocent part of yourself. Like we put it so much in the shadow. Like let's say you have a rape fantasy and whether or not you've had any kind of sexual abuse, but you have a rape fantasy. A lot of people think that's something really bad to have. Mm-hmm. When actually I think that the desires that you have or your fantasies are like this very unconscious, like your soul speaking to you saying, I need this kind of food. Mm-hmm. And to start respecting that, okay, there's a part of me that needs it, like maybe needs some kind of bondage, maybe like has to play that out, and to see that as a nourishment to yourself, because maybe something then will actually click in, right? Like maybe that's something you've needed to experience in a controlled setting, in a pleasurable setting, you know, in a safe setting, and then actually something in your psyche clicks in.
Yeah.
And I've heard that from a lot of people, that when they actually got to do it and it was in a well intentional and safe and communicated setting, that actually it felt like something fell into place.
I would like to share a personal experience around that I think is relevant, that so there was somebody who I was with years ago who had experienced a traumatic sexual assault and rape earlier in her life, and she was interested in exploring a rape fantasy. And we talked about that. Hold on, there's like a
That's me actually.
Oh, that's you? That's okay. It sounds like the same machine I have over here. So she was interested in exploring this, right? And it was like, for reference for everybody listening, like when we had sex prior to that, like occasionally she would experience some sort of flashback or something and go into a freeze response or start crying and have all these things come up. And, you know, we had talked about it, and I knew that that didn't necessarily mean like anything bad is happening, or neither did it mean stop. It just meant like be present with and breathe and check in, you know, and say, hey, you know, are you here? Are you safe? So one day we decided we wanted to try this rape fantasy. Mm-hmm. And it was like super fucking edgy for me as a guy, you know, like embodying that space, like total consent, yes. And still to like step into that was uncomfortable at first. Yes. So we created like boundaries, and we created like a safe word, and we did all the things that we were supposed to do. We like looked it up. Okay, how can you do this well? You know?
I love that.
Because it was like, I don't want to fuck with this. Like
right.
this person has serious trauma, you know? So if we're going to do this, I want to make sure that we do it really well.
Yeah.
And we went into the experience, and we had a safe word, like I did the things, like I tackled her and like held her down, and I'm not a small guy, like I'm a strong person. I know that, you know, and I can restrain people, and like I did that, and I like ripped off her clothes, and like, you know, we did the fantasy and she did experience some sort of flashbacks during that experience. And the element of her ultimately being in complete control,
she could have
stopped it at any moment, you know, if she said the thing, like she knew that she was in complete control the whole time with me.
Yeah.
And that for her was an incredibly healing experience to in some ways like relive some parts of that, but to do it on her own terms and repattern parts of her brain and her nervous system. And it was, yeah, it was an incredibly beautiful experience that shifted a lot actually for her. And so, yeah, I noticed there's like a little edginess in sharing that story publicly, but also like it was a beautiful experience. And I'm not a therapist. I'm not going to recommend that anyone listening to this go out and try it today. But if you're interested, like do your research, because there are ways to do that well that can be fun and incredibly sexy and also healing. You know, it wasn't just healing. It was really sexy too, you know, for both of us.
Yeah. Yeah. I thank you for sharing that, because I realize that's very personal and that's raw. And it's very important. It's very important that people know that there's a way to do this that is healing and that's safe. Yeah. There's a book called Healing Sex, if people are interested in that. And that's really about how to go into intimacy when there is trauma. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's lots of resources online on how to do this well. And to know, to permit yourself that you are allowed to have an experience like that, right? And you're allowed to want that, and to not always question it. Like, it doesn't always have to come from trauma. It can. Mm-hmm. But to permit yourself the experience of, you know what, let's go in it. And I can always say stop.
Totally.
And let's see what happens there. And I think that's just so deeply beautiful. So thank you so much for sharing that story. I really, really appreciate that. Yeah.
And to normalize, like, a lot of women have rape fantasies.
It's quite common. Super common.
And a lot of women have gangbang fantasies too. Yep. And like, that's real, you know?
Yeah.
That's real.
Yeah. So a little personal story for me. I have a gangbang fantasy, and I remember sharing that with a partner with a previous relationship, and he was so upset about it that I don't want to be with a woman that has fantasies like that.
Yeah.
And that was so hard for me to receive and to be shamed in a way for my sexual innocence. Cause I think that's what fantasies are. There's a sexual innocence to it. Mm-hmm. It took me a really long time to get over that.
Yeah.
So totally. To why I'm sharing that, I think, is to give the awareness that when somebody is sharing their fantasy or their desire with you, to be very mindful that you are not shaming, that you are not bringing judgment into the space, because it's so raw and vulnerable to share that with somebody. And it's something you have no choice in. You have no choice in this. This is so innocent.
Totally.
Yeah.
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 Mm. Yeah. Mm, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for saying that. When you said that, I thought of two scenarios. I was talking to a buddy of mine when his girlfriend shared that exact same fantasy.
Yeah.
And he got super triggered.
Yeah.
Super, super triggered.
Yeah.
And I get it. Like, I think about myself, like, would I be able to do that?
Yeah.
You know, would I be able to be in the room with my partner and actually go through a gangbang fantasy with this person?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No.
You know, maybe. Maybe someday, you know, but like I think that's part of the thing with fantasy, you know, like you don't always, like, fantasies can remain fantasy and you can do them, you know, but like you don't always have to act on all these fantasies. But I think what you're saying is super important, like to understand that a fantasy, there is this innocence that's attached with it. And there's different ways you can play with it too. Like, I wanted to have a threesome for years, and it was like challenging for my relationships because the people who I was with didn't, you know, they were scared by that. And so one thing we started to do was when we would make love, just the two of us, like we would just imagine that there was another person there.
Right.
And talk about that. And like, what are they doing? And, you know, so there's, so many ways to explore this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So like, for instance, for the gangbang one or whatever, even if it's a rape fantasy, like it doesn't necessarily have to mean that you have to go into it. Like just being able to speak it out loud and have it be respected.
Totally.
I don't think in my case, but in that previous relationship, I didn't actually want to act it out, but I wanted it to be respected in a sense of just like, okay. So what would that look like? Or okay, cool. Totally. You get it. So yeah. Okay. Time's going very fast.
I know. I feel like we could talk for a long time.
I feel like we just got started. I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah. Maybe we need to do round two someday.
Hmm?
Yeah, because there are a lot of questions on that list.
Yeah.
From a while ago.
I know. Okay. What do you think men wished women knew about them?
Hmm. What do I think men wished women knew about them?
Yeah. What do you think men may feel like women are maybe not getting or not seeing?
Wow, that's a tricky one. It's a complex one.
Yeah.
What do I think women are not getting? So what comes up for me, the first thing that comes up is like, I think women often feel like they have to fit into some sort of range or some sort of idea of who they are in order to be attractive to mm-hmm. a man, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. one thing that I find super attractive is when a woman can embody all different kinds of archetypes within herself, like all different flavors, if you will, mm-hmm. of existence. So, mm-hmm. you know, like the creative artist, like mm-hmm. the innocent person, like mm-hmm. if you want to use the term, you know, the whore, mm-hmm. like embody that archetype, like embody this whole range of mm-hmm. stuff. And like, you don't have to fit into this one little box of your idea of what
yes.
a woman is.
Yes. You know? Yes.
I love the whole spectrum.
Yeah.
And I think generally men do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Generalization for sure. But I think so.
I love that. I think that's very beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one other thing unrelated to that I want people to just be aware of too. And that men might not want women to know this, but this is true.
Ooh.
Like men are way more sensitive
yeah.
than they'll ever admit. And women probably actually know this, but maybe men just don't admit this to themselves. But yeah, we're very sensitive. Even that, you know, those of us who put on a front and like do the tough guy image and like, oh, I'm fine. Like, yeah, we're very sensitive creatures.
Yeah. I notice I'm always, when I hear that, I'm just struck with that. It must be really lonely. It must be really like, that when you are this sensitive and it's not something you can admit to yourself, you can really like give space to, like that must be often a very lonely experience to be in. Because when I feel shit, I'm on the phone with my girlfriends.
Totally.
Right. And I feel completely okay showing that to the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is why like so important for men to go out and do this work and connect with other guys. Like go to a men's retreat, go to a workshop. And I'm flashing back to all these different things that I've done with different men and like seeing this like this MMA fighter guy, like at one of these things, who's a total like fighting badass, you know, like cry in these other men's arms because it was the first time he was ever actually vulnerable with other guys. Mm. And it was like one of the biggest openings of his life. And it's like, you know, he'd kept these guys out for so long, but it's like actually doing that sort of thing makes you stronger.
Yeah.
You know, like opening yourself to brothers, like actually improves your life. It improves your relationships and it makes you a stronger person because you realize, oh, this part of yourself that you've been hiding is actually, it's real and it's worthy of attention and love. And if you can love your full self, like, man, you know,
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Okay. My last question, my almost last question, maybe. I would say last question, then there's still like four. Great. Feminine Great. Flowing. One thing that's really struck me is that we really demonize the male turn on, right? Mm. So we think it's dangerous. We think, I don't know, men have no control over it. And I'm not gonna like discount that there have been many, 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 many times for everybody, every like in history that male turn on has been something dangerous. But for a man in a male's body, it must be really confusing to be with such a strong sexual force that is also so often demonized and thought of as scary or as threatening or as something primal that they have no control over. For the men that I know that have healed that relationship to their turn on, they're the most powerful men I've ever met. Mm-hmm. So do you recognize that, this demonization? And two, I think like what can men do to help restore that again, to restore it to its sacredness? Or maybe the question is actually like, what's so beautiful about the male turn on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. This could be a half hour conversation.
That's okay. We can go a bit further.
We should have timestamps on this. Like if you want to hear this question, go 47 minutes and to acknowledge the world we're living in now, it's different from the world 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, 10 years ago, it's very much the same world in many ways. In terms of like all the same unhealthy behaviors exist and patterns exist, but now there's more attention on all this stuff, you know, and there's more awareness around it, which is fucking awesome. Super important. Very, very important to talk about this stuff. And, you know, in the climate of like Me Too, post Me Too, like, and consent awareness and all this stuff, like it can be scary for some guys, especially guys who haven't done investigation and exploration around what does consent actually mean.
Yeah.
Not just like consent means yes and no, obviously, but like there's so many deeper layers to it. There's so many things to explore. And and I, you know, I would just encourage, like, in the current climate that is our reality, that is going to only get more articulated and clear and transparent. Like for any guy who's really wanting to step into himself, into his sexual self, to like do your work, to understand boundaries and consent, look up the wheel of consent. It's fucking incredible. And it doesn't sound anything like what the name is. Like it'll change your sex life forever. And learn how to talk about uncomfortable things. Learn how to have the conversation, like the sexual elevator speech, you know, like before you have sex with somebody new, like what are your desires? What are your fears? What are your boundaries? Like, are you in a relationship with anybody else? What's your sexual health status? Like all this stuff, like build your sexual toolbox, you know, build your sexual repertoire, you know, your pack, your like belt, like whatever you want to call it. So that when you do actually experience this turn on, when you do experience like that, the potency that is the male sexual charge, you have a healthy avenue and tools to be able to move forward with that clearly. To where A, you're not going to feel anxious and concerned that you're going to do anything quote unquote wrong, but B, the person who you're with is going to feel safe and is going to want to fully receive this from you. You know? And I recognize that that takes work. But if you're a guy listening to this and you feel any sort of anxiety or closure at the thought of like totally ravishing your partner, then like do some work around this and it will only improve your life.
I love that actually, because a lot of women want to be pushed against the wall. A lot of men want to do it and they're terrified of doing it.
Totally.
And to actually, like, one of the ways to be with that is to figure out when is it safe and when isn't it? And when is it safe is when there are clear communication around it. And you know, there's space to say no, or there's time to be like, okay, are you so good? Yeah. Okay.
Totally.
Right. Yeah. To have those check-in moments and that creates safety. And then in that there's much more room to play.
Totally. Yeah. And you don't always have to be having this long conversation before every sexual experience. Like you create the foundation, you create the field, if you will. You know, and then within that, like, of course, check in every once in a while and when feels appropriate, but like you can create the field to where you're in your kitchen, you know, 2 weeks after, you know, since your last talk, and you see your partner and then they're cooking and all of a sudden you just take them and like throw them up against the wall and like pull their pants down, and that's okay. You know? And it's fucking sexy to, for a woman generally, I see your reaction, but like, when a woman experiences that, they're like, oh,
yummy. You know? And I will speak into that briefly from like a women's perspective. Like I, for instance, with my current partner, I know I can always say no and he's going to be totally okay with it. So I'm like, okay, baby, it's not a big deal when I say no. And so he has much more space to just try out things all the time, because I know I can at any moment say, actually, I wanted to watch a movie. Right. So that creates the trust in the relationship. And then when there's trust, there's much more room to try things out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you just spoke to something that's also really important, is like cultivating your no.
Yeah.
It's super, super important. Practice it, practice it, practice it. Like empower your no, charge up your no. And when you're really clear in your no, then you can trust yourself more and your partner will trust you more too.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I know if I feel that my partner won't take care of himself, then I find it really hard to trust him and I actually open less.
Yeah.
And so that's also on the flip side, like when my partner can completely feel that I will stand for my no. He knows that he can let go, because he doesn't have to manage that for me. He doesn't have to be like hyper vigilant on what's going on with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. Last question.
Bitch.
I'm thinking what I want to do is the last question. Yes. What's your favorite thing about the feminine?
Well, I'll tell you what just went into my brain immediately, which is just when you said feminine, I thought women, and then immediately it was just like smell.
Ooh, I love that. Ooh. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so many things, but that was just first. I'm exploring with this person right now, deepening in relationship with this person, and I'm just completely in love with her smell. It's like a drug. It's fucking awesome.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah.
I love it. I think something that the feminine very much enjoys from the masculine is kind of like being engaged with on all senses. Mm-hmm. And like, this is just like a top tip to guys, like, just like smell her, taste her, see her, hear her, all of it, like feel her, like just being completely engaged in all the senses is so attractive and just feels so engaged.
Totally. It
feels like you're fully there with somebody.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And like every part, like her head, her armpits, her throat, her breasts, her yoni, like her legs, like all of this, you know, and then really pay attention to that. And if you're exploring with somebody new and they don't smell good to you, like that's a really good sign to not keep exploring with that person.
That's true. That's biology saying, actually, no. Yeah.
Unless they're on hormonal birth control. And then that's a whole other discussion.
That changes their constitution. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. What is the feminine for you? Like, is it? I don't know. Is it nature? Is it?
It's the fact that you just asked me another question after you said you were going to finish with that one question.
Feminine flow. Yeah. Good answer.
It's feminine when I detach it from the idea of genitals and sexual identity.
Yeah.
The feminine for me is more like, the cycles of things, the seasons, the flow, like emotions, you know, the daytime, nighttime, the fluctuations of everything, fluctuations within myself, you know, my own emotions, my own like ejaculatory cycles. Like, and if you want to get even more esoteric, it's just like matter, like this cup, you know, this microphone that I'm talking into, this computer, you know, it's all, and you know, conversely, like if you're going that route, like the masculine is the energetic substrate, or it's the constant, it's the sun, it's the thing that's always there. It's that penetrating force and penetrating in the dancing, you know?
Yeah.
And there's part of me that wants to separate totally from even the labels of masculine and feminine.
I agree.
But that's, you know, that's what we're using right now for this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely agree. I wish it wasn't as gendered, but the gendered part makes it also easy for a lot of people to grasp.
Totally.
But everybody, regardless of your gender, you need to cultivate both your masculine and feminine so that you have choice.
Yeah. So, and to even make it non-gendered, cultivate your yin and yang,
whatever you want to call it, but so that you have choice. So it's like, actually, what am I best in? Am I best, or like this hour, what am I my best in? Am I my best if I'm more in my yang energy? Am I best if I'm more in my yin energy? And to have a choice to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Okay. If people want to learn more about you or work with you, where can they find you? What's going on in your world?
Yeah. Yeah. So www.taylorjohnson.life is my website. I have a course for men all about semen retention coming up in a couple weeks.
Nice.
I don't know when this video is going to go out, but it's going to happen again later this year at some point. Yeah. So that's it. Yeah. And I have another course happening in August around learning how to have non-ejaculatory orgasms and all this stuff. And amazing. So my website's the place to find that out. Also, I'm on Instagram at Taylor Clark Johnson. Those are the two best places right now.
Okay, amazing. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time and your insight and your views. I really, really appreciate this.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. This is awesome.
Yeah. It's great. I'm so happy to hear that. Okay, I'm going to stop the recording here.
Great.
Where's my button? Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and we're so curious to know what you thought. So please do let us know on our social media, both Taylor and myself. If you'd like to learn more about Taylor, make sure to visit his website on taylorjohnson.life, and that's life with an F. And if you'd like to learn more about me, you can go to my website, sophiejosefina.com, or my Instagram with the same handle, both with an S and PH. And I'm about to launch my course, Healing the Masculine for Women. It starts this weekend, so if you'd still like to join, go to my link in bio on my Instagram. So that's @sophie.josefina.